You know, so with Valentine's Day coming up, I thought it was a perfect time to start a new series. The series is actually called Free and Single. And the reason why I've been thinking about this for a little bit over 2 years, about doing this and sharing some things that I've learned along the way. And I am young, I am 40 plus, I'm 30 plus actually, plus a whole lot. And things that I've learned along the way. And I was fortunate to have parents, you know, who modeled love, but they didn't tell me everything. Some of the things that I had to figure out on my own. They didn't tell me a lot of things because, you know, as progressive as my parents were for their generation, they still were in a different generation. And so I want to share some of that with you over the course of the next 3 weeks. Now, what's interesting is that, you know, being a pastor, I get phone calls and emails all the time. People asking me questions. And the questions, they generally have the same theme. You know, one of the questions is, how do I know God's will for my life? It's like, I get that question all the time. How do I know God is speaking to me? And in light of this topic, the question comes up all the time. How do I know God's will for the person in my life? How do I know if even God has a will for the person in my life? And it's something that people struggle with. And so, you know, we talk about it and stuff and point out some things that I've learned along the way, some things from the Bible that shows really how God is interested in your life. But the other question that I get, and the other thing that people come to me more times than I care to even count or to quantify, is relationship issues. They get a phone call and says, Pastor Gary, I need to speak with you because, and they go into the story. And the stories are heart-wrenching because there is nothing more personal than personal relationships. And it kind of like, you know, I hear the same stories all the time, right? There are variants of it, but it's like, well, when we were dating, she promised me that when we get married, she would. Or he said that he wouldn't do this, but he has. She treats me like garbage. She has no respect for me. Oh, I know he doesn't love me. He doesn't demonstrate that he loves me. He's verbally abusive, and I even got this one case where she's physically abusive. She beat a guy that I was speaking to a pulp. He watches football all day. Doesn't do anything. Doesn't help around the house, doesn't help with the kids. And the list goes on, and the list goes on and on. And all variants of the same theme. But you know, as I listen to these stories and I hear them over and over again, the thing that strikes me all the time is, and please forgive me, right, because I'm just telling you what goes through my mind. One thing that goes through my mind is, well, how come you didn't see that before? How come you didn't see that before you got married? Because generally speaking, whatever happens in the past and continues to happen in the past is going to show up in the future. And so it's like, how do you not think that? And then the other question is, how did you not think that was, you know, again, I don't verbalize it, right? Because I'm just kind of listening. I'm like, how could you not think that this would be the outcome? And sometimes I think like, the you know, women will say to me, you know, by the way, let me tell you, over the course of the next few weeks, it's going to be PG-13. So if you, there's going to be some things in here that I share that may make some parents a little bit uncomfortable. So If that's you, we have a really great kids program next door. I promise you, I won't go too wild, but, you know. I'm like, but all he wants is sex. I'm like, well, he's a guy. Don't you know how guys think? And by the way, I'm generalizing, right? Because, you know, that's not what all guys want. We're going to cover that in 1 week. You know, what do guys want? And it's like, don't you know what ladies need? And so throughout all of this, I wanted to just kind of share really along the way. And, you know, I was pondering these things, and it's amazing how the Lord works. You know, I was thinking through, well, how am I going to share this? You know, what points I'm going to share? There's so much in my head that I want to share. And quite unexpectedly, I came across a series of teachings from North Point Church. And they were dealing, this is years ago they dealt with this, they were dealing with the same topics. And so, you know, he organized a certain way, so I'm going to kind of follow that pattern to some extent. But, so, the series that we're doing is called Free and Single. Free and Single. And who is the series for? Well, it's for anybody who is single. It's for anybody who is married and wish they were single. It's for everybody who is single but have no plans of ever getting married or getting married again. It is for married folks who are happily married because you know single people, and I want you to be able to tell people this and refer them back to some resources that we'll have. So it's for everybody. But what's interesting is that I went through our church directory this week, our church roles, and we have more single adults in this church than married adults in this church. We have more single, that's just a slight majority. And we spend a great amount of time talking to married folks, when in reality, we need to spend a whole lot more time talking to single folks so that they don't become the married folks who, like, call me up. Because as growing up, they said an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so, here's a truism that's going to form. There are a couple statements I'm going to make today. And remember, when I do these four-week series, right, I want you to think of it. I'm like setting all this stuff up, you know. It's like, Gary, when are you going to get to the point? My wife always asks me, when are you going to get to the point? I'm like, come along with me, honey. It's a journey. Just follow along with me. And this is actually one big, giant sermon broken up into four parts. So you got to come for all four, right? So here's a truism that's going to carry out through all the messages. Your present soon will become your past, but your past will show up again in your future. It's pretty deep, huh? Your present, whatever you're doing today, whatever decisions that you make today, whatever actions that you take today, whatever things that you think today that I'm young, it doesn't really matter because I got plenty of time on my hand. Tomorrow, what you did today will be your past. But the things that you do in your present changes your emotional or your soul, your DNA. And those things that you do becomes you, and that you shows up in the future. So if you think that I don't have to save any money today because I'm young, and I'm just going to spend, that becomes part of your DNA, and that becomes part of your habit. And guess what? In your future, it's going to show up, and you get married, and what do? You spend. If you are sexually promiscuous today and you're like a butterfly and you go from flower to flower and you're going like, well, one day when I meet the right person, I'm going to stop all of that. That becomes part of your DNA. And guess what? When you get to when you get into marriage and all the the juicy stuff wears off and you start to, I remember when I was a butterfly. And then I get a call and I say, well, how come you didn't know that? That's what he did, or that's what she did for the entire time. Because your present, whatever decisions you make in your present, will soon become your past. But your past will show up again for you in the future. And so if you make the habit of dating, of going out with the wrong person today, if you see somebody and he's a cute guy or he's a cute girl, he's a cute girl, she's a cute girl. In today's day and age, let me tell you, there are some guys who make cute girls. Actually, this wasn't in my notes, and I'm going to share this with you, because you know what happens up here. My wife tells me, Gary, you just say whatever comes to your mind. It's not really true. I say most of what really comes to my mind. We had a guy at our, I have a secular job at my job. He, while he was working with us, he decided to go through and have a gender reassignment surgery. That's the official name. He had a sex change. And it was the weirdest thing. He was married to somebody who worked there at the same time. And my company is like really progressive, you know. So they're like, okay, you can have town halls and tell people what's going to happen and stuff. And so I asked him, I'm like, so are you still going to stay married? He's like, well, when I'm a man, I'm married. But when I change, I'll be a woman. So I don't want to be gay. So I am to have to get divorced, because it was a very interesting conversation. But let me tell you, when he transformed and he had his gender reassignment, you look at that face, and he was a cute girl. And let me tell you, it scared the brother half to death, because I'm like, thank God I'm married, because I wouldn't want to like be out there dating, because, you know, I don't know what. Anyway, that was free. That wasn't even part of my notes. And so, you know, you date the wrong person, and you make a habit of dating the wrong person, you will come to appreciate the wrong person. And the wrong person will be very attractive to you. And you keep doing it, and you're honing those skills, and you're getting better and better at those skills. I'm like, yeah, I can finesse. And guess what's going to happen? The greater chance is that you're going to end up with the wrong person. You know, so imagine that you're dating and dating and dating. And then sometimes you like think about marriage and sometimes you don't. But say, you know, I've been encouraged the young people. I said, hey, you know, because I speak to young people all the time. I was like, hey, you know what? You need to start thinking about Mr. Right. You need to start thinking about Miss Right. You need to make a list. And, you know, so I tell them, I'm like, make a list and check it twice and go out and ask your friends, you know, to like, does this list seem like it's me? And it's funny, because when I tell people, because I over the years I've learned that you gotta like tell them, like, look, pick no more than 3 to 5, right? Because they come up with this list, like, you know, like, I'm like, she's gotta be intelligent. She's got to be a Christian. She's got to be fun-loving. She's preferably a virgin, but if she's made a few mistakes, I mean, we can deal with that, but not a whole lot of mistakes. She can't have too much of a past, and she's got to come from a good family. She's got to be professional. She's got to be like a natural beauty, like a cutie, like she's a queen. So supreme. And she's got to be like fine. She's got to be fine. She's got to be like, and some guys like this, you know, like a brick house. And she says, no, the guy that I want, he's got to be tall. That just took me out of the runnings. Thank God I'm married. Actually, my wife wanted that too. She wanted somebody tall, dark, and handsome. I don't know what happened. I would like to say that there was wine involved and she was drunk. And I asked her, and while she was inebriated, she said yes. So we went to Vegas. No, that's not what happened. That was actually a joke. But she says she wants somebody tall, dark, and handsome. Of course, he's got to be a Christian. He's got to have a good job. And not just a good job, but a great job. Because, you know, in case I want to stay home, I want him to be able to take care of me. Right? And he's got to be a leader, but not just a leader. He's got to be like a servant leader. He's got to be like a good listener. And he's got to have a voice like Barry with a lot of bass and a body like Arnold with a Denzel face. And you want, every time he steps in the room, you hear Salt and Pepper in the background saying, "What a man, what a man, what a man. What a mighty good man." And you're like, "Yeah, that's my man." And that's what she wants, you know. And so they create a list. But the unfortunate thing is, like, more often, so I tell people that, please make it 3, no more than 5, please. Yeah. But more often than not, a lot of people don't have a list. Just going around the place and they're not even like looking for a person. And then, you know, they'll be at a party or something. They'll be somewhere. They'll be in the office. And they look across the room. And it's like the movies, you know, everything kind of stops. And they make eye contact. And it's like, look, it's like, wow, this is the man. The mighty good man. Man, she's royal. So royal. I just want her in my life. And so you look and you look and you look at each other and it's like, yes, that is the one. This is the one. I found him. I found my soulmate. And sometimes your friends are looking at him like, what? But a lot of times you keep it away from your friends, right? You keep it away from your friends because, you know, you don't want them seeing. You don't want them messing it up, you know, getting in the mix while you're working your game, while you're working your angle, while you're finessing. And what happens is that oftentimes if you made a habit of making bad decisions, all of a sudden, you're in a relationship with one, and then after a while, that thing that you found, which was really just chemistry, it was a chemistry. Yeah, chemistry is chemistry is like that feeling that you get, like butterflies and fireworks going off. It's like, man, this is perfect. This is the one. This is that God created them just for me. When God looked down in heaven and he's like, look, I'm going to make myself a Gary Wallace, and right beside him, I'm going to make this woman. And so you get in that, and the chemistry fades. And a few years into it, I get a phone call. The other thing that sometimes happens is that, so let's play this scenario out again. You look across the room, and you see, there's the girl. You look across the room like, there's a guy. He's the one. She's the one. And you go and you start talking to them. And you find out that they're different than you. If the girl is kind of been doing her thing, having her fun, and the guy is kind of trying to be the man, trying to do his thing and try to do the right thing, right at that moment in time, there's a dilemma that's faced. The dilemma that's faced is the guy is like, do I want to spend the rest of my life with this person? And then this person here, who's made a habit of all these mistakes and all these bad decisions and living in it and enjoying life, is faced with the question, would a man like that want a person like me? And therein lies the dilemma. And so we're here today, right here in the present, that will soon become our past, that will show up again into our future. and will show up again when we meet the person, the one. And here's the question. This is what Andy Stanley asked. Am I the person that the person that I'm looking for is looking for? Let me try that again. Some of you. Am I the person that the person I'm looking for, this guy, this huge, beautiful specimen of a man, am I the person that that guy is looking for? That is looking for, right? Am I the person that I am, that guy is looking for? And so the question like comes inside your head, and if you're single, and that's the question I want you to ask yourself all the time. Am I the person that I'm looking for is looking for? I want this good man. I want this good girl. But does that good man or that good woman deserve to be with somebody like me? Am I that person? Or flip side, I am trying to do my thing, and I meet somebody, and they have all these things, but they got all this crud. And do I want that? And at the end of this series, I want us to answer the question, I am actively striving to become the person that I'm looking for is looking for. That I'm actively striving, because in this side of eternity, you will never get to perfection. But it is something in our calculus where as X approaches zero or something like that, it never really gets to zero. It's always approaching zero. Right? You're always striving. You're getting better and better and better and better and better and better and better. So to answer the question that I want everybody to have, if you're single or if you know anybody who's single or if you're married and you're struggling with your marriage or whatever you have, is that am I the person? And he answered the question, I am actively striving to become the person that I'm looking for is looking for. And when you're striving to become that right person, here's a funny thing that happened. You don't even have to look really hard for the right person. Because what happens is that, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit later on, is that you're becoming that person more and more and more. You're becoming more and more in that person. And your senses get really, really honed. And all of a sudden, you start to quickly recognize people who are not the person that you're looking for. And here's something else that's true, is that as human beings, we have this pull on our life. It's kind of the sin tendency to kind of pull towards doing the wrong thing. Let me tell you, the wrong thing, my roots are coming out. The wrong thing oftentimes seems like so much fun. It seems like I can do the right thing tomorrow because I got tomorrow. And so there's a pull, and everything in our media, everything in, you know, whether it's social or it's TV or the movies, pulls us one way. I don't know. I was watching TV this week and just kind of thinking about it and preparing for this sermon. I was thinking through and as I was watching things, and so I really think about the messages that we get in the media. Right, so I was watching Scandal. You guys ever seen that show? And the amount of things that happened in that one episode that was completely contrary to anything that God would ever want was absolutely amazing. I was listening to a couple songs on the radio. I was like, man, this message was about, let me see if I can remember. Let me see. I'm trying to remember here. All right, let's see. This goes raindrops, ragtop, something like that. Hot box, something like that. Smoking up dope, cooking up coke, something like that. By the fact that you're laughing, y'all know the right words of the song. We need to talk afterwards. And I'm like, wow, it had a nice beat. It really had a nice beat. But the message that we get encourages bad behavior. It encourages wrong decisions. It pulls us. It desensitizes us, and it pulls us and pulls us. And that is what I call the pattern of this world. The pattern of this world pulls you in a certain direction. There's always this pull. There's always this pull. And God says, look, the first thing that you got to do is you got to not be conformed to that pattern of this world. The pattern of the world is pulling you. He's like, it's like, I'm not going to conform. But to be transformed, and that word, the original language, is a word for metamorphosis, which is not an instant change. It is a constant change. It's like a caterpillar turning into a butterfly, the process that the caterpillar goes through in the whole cocoon stage to become into that butterfly. And that's what we're doing. And God says, look, I don't want you to conform to the pattern of the world, but how do you do that? It's to be metamorphosized daily by the renewing of your mind. You see, it becomes a mindset that says, I am not going to conform, and so therefore I am going to do some things. I'm going to practice some things that makes me transformed so that I won't be conformed. I'm going to do these things, and I'm going to actively pull against it. I'm going to pull against it because if left to my own devices, the pattern of the world, I am going to do the pattern of the world. But not you can be conformed. And what it takes is deliberate action, and it's deliberate practice. And the Bible outlines itself. It outlines in itself how to do that, especially when it comes on. Well, including the areas where it comes on to love and relationships. And so, we all know that God is love, right? And so if you're looking for love, if you want to find that special person someday, if you want to be loved, if you want to love somebody and feel lovely and be loving and all that, you got to practice it. You got to practice it. And I feel Allen Iverson coming on. You got to practice. No matter how good you think you are at this love thing, you can't be a franchise player in this. You got to practice. And love, when you practice love, it becomes part of your DNA, and you practice love, so you could be the most unlovable person, the most unlovely person, the most unloving person, but you're like, I'm going to practice. And over time, you start to change, and all of a sudden, you're not even thinking about it anymore. You're just doing. Because let me tell you, ladies, gentlemen, this is going to come up in week 3 or week 4. This statement, but I'm going to give you a preview here. The best indicator of the future of any individual is their past. It's not a promise. When I was growing up, my mother used to tell me, a promise is a comfort to a fool. Do you want me to promise you something? I'm like, but if you do, and I'm comforted, then I'm a fool. No, don't promise, just deliver. Your past is the only indicator of the future. It doesn't necessarily mean that it will happen. And so what needs to happen, and you're going to hear this again, is that when you're looking at an individual, you need to look at their recent past. And you decide, if I have that recent, and you, by the way, guys, recent past is not like 1 week. You need like a year or two, not a year, like 3-4 years of looking to see that person is transformed. Now, just kind of a little bit different. If a person has gone through a transformation process by accepting Jesus, the first transformation is immediate, but the process of deprogramming sometimes takes some time. So you need to develop some time in the middle to see a pattern of change before. Anyway, that's week 3 or week 4. And so, you know, when you start practicing love, you start to exude love, and people look at you like, they don't only look at you and say, what a handsome, what a man, what a mighty good man. They don't say that. They look, and they're like, that man is a lovely man. That woman, she's a lovely woman. And they start to see some qualities that are inside, more than the job, more than the accomplishments, more than the words, but they see something just coming out in actions, and it comes out from your actions. So how do we practice love? And I love the Bible because the Bible has the answer to all of life's questions. And so in 1 Corinthians 13, everybody know that's the love chapter. We're going to look at the things that we should practice, that when it comes a part of our DNA, we'll become lovely people, because this is what I want. If I want someone who is lovely and someone who is loving, I have to first be becoming lovely and loving. Let me repeat that. If I want someone who is lovely and loving, I have to first be becoming loving and then lovely. So in there, the two parts of speech, as a verb and a noun, the loving is some acting, some action, and the lovely is the noun, is what happens after the action. You see, what we really want is somebody who is the noun, and the action flows out of the noun. But in order for you to become the noun, you got to start first with the action. You got to first start with the verb before the verb becomes the noun. All right, you guys, ponder that for a second. That's deep thought number two for today. And so, if you want to prepare yourself for that future relationship, right? Because if you want somebody's love, you got to like prepare, right? If you want to prepare yourself for that future relationship, every conversation, every interaction, whether it's with your mama, your papa, your sister, your brother, your uncle, your dog, you practice these things. And so the 1 Corinthians 13 tells us some things in just three verses, 4, 5, 6, 7, 4 verses, a whole lot about what we should practice. And what I love about it, so I'm going to kind of split up the verses a little bit, but you can just read it. It's all in there. It gives a list of, these are the things that if you're practicing, you need to stop. And it gives you a list of, if you ain't doing these things, you need to start. And so we're going to start with the list of what love is not. Love is not envious. Some versions say jealous. Love does not envy. It is literally being happy for somebody because of just what's happening to them. It's not trying to say, well, you know what happened to me too. They tell you, I got a promotion. Well, 2 weeks ago, I got a promotion too. How was your promotion? Well, mine was bigger than yours. Yeah, it's none of that. Somebody say, I got a promotion. He's like, really? I'm so happy for you. And you're genuinely happy for them, and you ask them questions, and you like, man, let's go celebrate without telling people about your thing that was just better than their thing that they're telling you about. And I could go on and on and on in examples, you know. And as I was thinking about this, I remember there was a friend of mine. I still consider this person a friend. And I was telling them about something bad that happened to me. It's kind of a misfortune. And the person's response shocked me. It still kind of shakes me to the core when I think about it. The person says, they laughed a little bit. And I'm like, why are you laughing? And they said, well, I'm glad to know that bad things happen to you too. And I thought about it for a second. I'm like, I'll be the first one to tell you that the Lord has blessed me tremendously. I'd be the first one to tell you that. But I don't think I could really say that to somebody. Love doesn't do that. I didn't feel love that day. See, love is not envious. Love is just happy for somebody who is in the place where they need to be. Love is not jealous. And we're going to talk about that jealousy in a second. But another thing that love is not proud. Love is not proud. It's not arrogant. It's not thinking of yourself more highly than somebody else. And by the way, remember I tell you about this, that when you practice it with everybody that you meet, every interaction that you meet, you become lovely. You become that person. That the person that you're looking for is looking for. And so usually, if a guy is really proud, it shows up in like, you want me? God's gift to woman. I got it like that. And if you're a girl, you's like, you know, there's a song back in the day by a group called In Vogue. I like the song. The song goes, the men all pause when I walk into the room. And there's a part in there she says, because I know I'd be looking good. Love is not proud. It's not proud. It's appreciative for what you have, and you're happy for it, but you're not. It's not proud. So, and then love does not boast. It's not boastful, right? Whereas arrogance is thinking it inside your head. Boastful is verbalizing it out of your mouth and in your actions. And so, you know, when a girl knows that she looks good and she's all stuck up and all of that, she's acting like she's all that, and as they would say back in the day, and a bag of chips. And you look at her and he's like, man, she looks good. And, you know, I made some bad decisions in my past. Thank the Lord that he changed me. I went out with a girl at that one time because I didn't really care how she kind of was, because I was just kind of happy to be going out with her because I wasn't tall. It was kind of dark, but I wasn't handsome. That lasted, again, another freebie. Man, my girl left me on the dance floor for another dude. I tapped her on the shoulder and says, I'm going home. You coming? And she's like, wait, let this dance finish. She's probably still on the dance floor. That was the last time. Don't be a narcissist. Don't be that guy. Don't be that girl. Another thing that love does not do, it does not, it's not dishonoring of others. It doesn't dishonor others. And love doesn't seek to cut down somebody else so that you can look good, or just cut somebody else down because you can. Love does not disrespect people. If you are with somebody and you see them disrespecting other people, one of the things that really bothers me to the core is when I see people, like we're in a restaurant and the servers come over and people treat the servers like they're just garbage. It's a huge turnoff to me, because I'm like, that's not love. They're people too, with families and kids and stuff like that. They go to the bathroom just like you. And you come across somebody that, listen, it's only a matter of time before that junk is going to turn on you. And if you're practicing that and you're like, I'm going to stop tomorrow, if you don't stop today, you're not going to stop tomorrow because you keep practicing. So if you're practicing that, stop practicing. Because that doesn't make you a lovely person. By the way, along with that, which is almost just as bad as complete ignoring somebody who may be a lower class than you, a socioeconomic class. A lot of times I see it happen. That somebody will come in the room and, like, you know, we're in a hotel and the maid comes in the room or something, you know, like in a conference room, right? And they're bringing in the food. People just like, they don't even exist. It exists. But a real lovely person says, good morning, how are you doing? How's your day going? They made them laugh and made them feel like a person, because those skills show up back again in your future. It just does. A couple more on the don't list. Now, love is not self-seeking. Have you ever come across someone who won't do something without asking, why I got to do that? What's in it for me? You want me to help you do that? I get some money. This past week, I had some furniture delivered, and I had money in my pocket to give to the guy, because I had a sofa that I was going to take downstairs. And I said to the guy, I said, hey, can you help me take the sofa downstairs? I was tipping him from before, and I was going to give him an extra tip. He's like, well, I don't know if we can do that. Let me go out to the truck and asked the other guy. I was thinking, well, you and I can take it downstairs, but whatever. He went out, he came back in. The guy said, I'll take it down. We'll take it down for you. How much are you going to pay? I was a little bit turned off by that. I mean, I was going to give him some money. It's one sofa. I'm like, well, I gave you $20. He's like, minimum of 40, man. I'm like, for one sofa? He's like, you want it downstairs? I'm like, not by you. I got Emilio and Matthew. They did it. And they didn't even know, man. They didn't even know they were going to. They got 20. Love is. So it was funny because Matthew's like, Dad. I'm like, dude, you want to take this sofa downstairs from me. You really do. You really do. He's like, all right, man. Love does things without seeking what's in it for me. Love does things without seeking what's my angle. What's my angle? What's my personal benefit? Here's another thing that love is not. Two more. It's love is not easily angered. You know, I performed the wedding. I officiated a wedding for my nephew. He and his wife, they watch and listen to this thing. So that, hey, Bradley and Krista, this is for you. So it was last year, and I was asking their story because, you know, when I'm doing a ceremony, a wedding ceremony, I like to keep it personalized, right? And I was asking their story, and I'm like, well, how did you guys get together? And Krista said, I had some tests that Bradley had to go through. I'm like, did he know? She goes, no, he didn't know till afterwards. I'm like, so what's one of the tests? She goes, I had an anger test. I'm like, really? How do you do the anger test? And she said, I took him out driving in traffic to see what would happen when traffic was bad and people were cutting him off, to see whether he was easily angered or not. And I said, how did he do? She goes, well, we're here, aren't we? He didn't get flustered. He was just going with the flow. Look, folks, anybody who just blows off at the top, got to watch out for, because they're going to turn around and do that to you. If you are the type of person who the least of the thing gets you just going crazy, you can't go with the flow. You can't sit down you can't chill like a lizard on a limb with the wind blowing, just chill. Think about that for a second. You don't want somebody, and you don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be that girl who's known for easily being angry, because that junk is going to show back up, and you're going to show it to your spouse later on. And the last one on this list is keeping records of wrong. Now, this one, I practice. I'm still practicing this. I'm being completely transparent, you guys. And Donna will tell you that. She goes, Gary remembers everything. But I've learned not to bring it up unless I get challenged and I remember. I'm like, guys. And that's not lovely. I just have this thing about numbers. Things just happen and I count them. But Don and I, and this is true, that we have within our marriage, we say that whenever we deal with an argument, we can only deal with that argument, that issue right there at that point. You can't bring back up 50 other references, because that's irrelevant for this argument, because that was resolved already. That's a pass. We're dealing with this. And boy, when you can remember stuff, it's hard. It's straight up hard. But I practice it. I practice it because love does not keep record of wrongs. So you may ask a question. There's another song. I want to know what love is. I'm going to tell you what love is. Here's what love is. Love is patient. Love is patient. If you want to be lovely and loving, and practice loving, you got to practice being patient. Love really encourages the other person. Dudes, if you are going out with a girl and you've taken out to the third and the fourth and the fifth and the sixth date, and you're like, girl, what do we have? Let's define this. Usually it's the other way around. It's usually the ladies saying to the men, what do we have? Let's define this relationship. But let me go the other way, because the men, well, the first one is the men. So I'm going to keep it real. I'll keep it real. You go on three dates and you try to kiss her goodnight. And she's like, I'm not ready for this. Love is patient. If you love her, There'll be no pressure involved. It's like, are we cool, babe? It's not like, well, we cool. It's like, your attitude shouldn't change. And guys, that's like really hard for us to do, right? Because we're like reward and goal. We're going to talk about another week. Men are just goal and reward focus, you know? And so that's not loving. If you're pressuring somebody to do something, or somebody's pressuring you to do something, that's not being loving, and that's not lovely. I'm going to spend a couple moments on this, right? And the list is long, but I really wanted to break it down for you, and then we'll close, on what love is and what love is not. Because when you get this and you practice this, and I want everybody in here, whether you're married or not, to practice this day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out, for the rest of your lives. So I got to spend a few moments on it. This one, love is kind. Another way of saying love is kind is love is considerate. Folks, let me tell you, if you see somebody working and somebody doing stuff outside, don't just walk by them and pretend like you don't seem like the Good Samaritan, the priest. Go and offer some help. You see some lady taking out her groceries to the car and she's struggling with it. Go and offer some help. You see, whatever you do, you see your mom washing dishes. Go offer some help. Because you think about, man, she had a tough day at work. I was chilling all day. Go, because, let me tell you, when you do this, there's someday some girl going to be looking at him like, man, look how that man treats his mama. That's how he's going to treat me. And you don't do this, you're not going to be considerate. You got to actively put your mind in thinking, man, you see, I am not the kind of guy that believes that chivalry is dead, because chivalry is a really, really considerate thing to do. And you know, sometimes guys are like, well, I got to open the door. She can open the door herself. She's stronger than me. Because it demonstrates kindness. It demonstrates being considerate. And by the way, I'm not dropping any words to anybody, because, you know, people like, it's funny. You know, when I come to church and I preach, people's like, Pastor, you were preaching to me. And you know what I think? Well, because, you know, if you have that issue going on. But I'm not really preaching to anybody, but I'm preaching to everybody, including myself. All right, so love, next one. Love rejoices in the truth. Love rejoices in the truth. When somebody tells you something and proactively asks you for forgiveness, forgive them. Forgive them. Be happy that they told you the truth. Because love says, man, I am so happy that you told me the truth. And it doesn't dwell on the wrong. You got to fix the wrong. You got to do the things necessary to ensure that doesn't happen again in some way, shape, or form. But love does not dwell on the wrong. Love dwells on the truth that came out and what we're going to do next moving forward. Love always protects. Love is always protective. And, you know, the original language says that this protective is protective of the character of the other person. If somebody loves you, they're going to protect the character of the person they love. In other words, if they have an argument with that person, that argument is not going to go out into the world and telling everybody that, hey, look, my wife or my husband did stuff. That's not love. Love's like, I am protecting the integrity of this individual because I love them. I get information all the time on people in here. And I know that I got to, because I love people in here, I got to protect the integrity of people in here. I can't go out and tell people about stuff, because love always protects. Always protects. If you're somebody wrongs you, you go one-on-one and you deal with it. You don't go 1-on-50 and tell the whole world. Here's two. How to do them together. Love is always trusting. Love is always hopeful. You know, the original language, the way these words read, it's almost like that trust, it's almost like a religious faith. It's saying, I'm going to give this person the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give this person the benefit of the doubt. Almost like a religious faith. I believe in them. And some people say, well, isn't that stupid? And I'm like, well, maybe, but it's smart. Because if you're always doubting, if you're always doubting, that relationship will never prosper. If you cannot take somebody at their word, and you can't take anybody at their word, you need to start looking at yourself, because that becomes the common denominator, is you. And I'm sensitive to the fact that some of you in here, your past may not cause you to want to trust anybody. And so you got to develop a new past. Remember I kind of talked about that? So your past, and somebody hurt you really badly, and you're like, I'm never going to get hurt again. Well, not everybody is alike. Not everybody you're going to meet in the future. So start to practice the habit of trusting in little and building that over time, so you get some history and it becomes part of your DNA to start trusting again, because love is always trusting. Love is always hopeful. Like they mess up, says, I'm hoping that we learn from it and we're moving forward. But love always perseveres. Love is always persevering. Love will, when you love somebody and the times are tough, love sticks with it. And you're like, we're going to work through this. We're going to work through this. And it doesn't start with the other person doing that. It starts with you saying, man, we're going to work this out. And it doesn't start with a person that you are romantically involved with. It starts with your friendships. And you're like, your friend does something to hurt you. You don't like, well, that's it. Total unfriend. Like, block. You know, unlike, unfriend. Love requires you not to be a quitter. If you believe in something, you work through the issues. It doesn't just happen like, I'm taking my marbles and I'm going home. You know, as a little kid, you know, playing marbles. And then, you know, I don't like what's going on. Give me my marbles. Shoot. Go home. Love always perseveres. And folks, I want to tell you that this stuff is not natural. The pattern of the world is love is the left column and love is not the right column. And it requires practice. It requires being deliberate. It requires you to actively do this in every situation. And when you do this, you become. Because you're practicing loving. When you're practicing loving, you become lovely. You become lovely. And so in order for you to be Mr. Right, in order for you to find Mr. Right and find Miss Right, you have to first become Mr. Right and Miss Right. You have to love. And when you love and you are lovely, when you're lovely, you can give love. And when you give love, that makes you becoming loving. And that's truly when you can find Mr. and Miss Right. So I know, as I'm wrapping up, you know, some of you guys may be thinking and like, oh, this is great. I need to practice living this out. But how does that help me find my soulmate? All right, that's all good and well, but I'm still lonely. You can tell I listen to a lot of songs because these songs come back to my head. There was a song that I used to listen to back in the day called Lonely Won't Leave Me Alone. And I'm still lonely because lonely won't leave me alone. How do I find my Mr. Right and my Miss Right? How do I find this one? How does that prevent me from getting the wrong one and ending up in one of those marriages? How does that help me? How does that help me get out of not getting a marriage that has that all that drama and all that unhappiness? And it does take two people, but how do I find the one? Because I want to be the one, and I need another person. It takes two people. And I love the Bible. Because here's what the Bible says. Come back to my first question, which is, how do I know God's will for my life? How do I find the one for my life? Remember this verse? Do not conform to the pattern of the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. when you conform and you metamorphosize, here's what happens. The same verse. It's not even like I'm taking it out of context or anything. Here's that, like, when you do that, here's what happens. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is. So when that person shows up on the scene, you don't have to guess anymore. You'll be able to test and approve. You'll be able to see it, like, isn't she lovely? Isn't she wonderful? And God's will, I told you before, is just simply God's desire. And, you know, this is controversial, what I'm going to say. I don't believe that there's only one right person, but I certainly believe that there are much better choices and much worse choices and some people who are not God's will, right? There, you know, some people can fit the criteria, but there are some things that don't bring out the best in you, and so there are better choices, but you'll be able to test and prove what God's will is. But not just anybody that will work, but His pleasing and perfect will. The best of the best of the best. And that's how you find Mr. Right and Miss Right and avoid Mr. Wrong and Miss Wrong. And I'm going to invite the worship team to come to the platform. And this mind renewing thing is tough, right? And but God says that you can try and do it. You can try and do it on your own. You can practice it. And of course, you're going to become better because these are life principles as much as they are spiritual principles. And by life principles opposed to spiritual principles, I'll kind of explain that in a second as the music team come. See, a life principle is that something you just practice. A spiritual principle is enabled by the Holy Spirit to help you live that life principle out. And so in order to you to live these principles out, you need God's Spirit in your life. And God tells us that in Galatians 5:22, and I'm only going to all this. He says that when you ask God to come into your life, His Spirit comes inside of you, and it produces a kind of fruit, and a fruit is a very complex fruit that it produces. But one of the characteristics of that fruit is love. So the fruit of the Spirit is love, and that's what I want for you today. I want you to have God's Spirit of love evidenced in your life so you can live this out. Let's just pray. With your heads bowed and the music is going to be playing here. And I just want to ask you that if you never ask God to put His Spirit into your life, that today you'll say, God, I have made it about so many other things else. But right here, right now, when I think about it, I want to come to the heart. I want you to fill my heart where it's all about you and all about pleasing you. God, please take control of my life. And you can just say it in your mind. Please take control of my life. And I give it all to you. In Jesus' name, amen. If you've made that said